what we're going to talk about today is going to be Chassam Sofer. There's a little bit of other stuff over here. Oh my God. I've done Chassam Sofer every year for the last 6 years. That's how many Chassam Sofer are. Every year I find a new Sofer.
You could be doing
Sukhosov. No, absolutely not. No, you're a terrible person. Parshas Ki Tzeitzeh. Here we go. The Chassam Sofer says the following. Parshas Ki Tzeitzeh says, we know that Balei Tshuva are supposed to be on a higher level than Tzadikim. It's a hard thing to understand, but it's supposed to be Makom Shebalei Tshuva Omdim Ein Tzadikim Yecholim Amod. The place where Balei Tshuva stand, those who become Balei Tshuva, are in an area that is higher than regular Tzadikim. Now, that cannot mean that some random guy who just, you know, he was on a farm, you know, 3 days ago, and he just went to Eish HaTorah, and he's like, I'm keeping the Torah. Well, all of a sudden, that guy's at a higher level for Chaim Knievsky. That obviously can't be. That doesn't make any sense to anyone. And that's problematic. So that can't be. The question is, what does it mean exactly? So it means the following. A tzaddik gomer who has never sinned has no ability to give mussar to other people. Because when he tells people, you shouldn't do this, you shouldn't do that, everybody looks at him and they say, you never had this taiva. You never had these yetzer hara. It never happened to you. So as much as they tell you over and over again, this is the wrong thing, this is the wrong thing to do, they don't know what it's like, or so the person thinks, the person who's doing this avera. They think, come on, who is this person? Tell me, they don't know who it is. So that's the advantage that a Baal Tshuva has. The Baal Tshuva has that advantage of, I was there. I've been there, done that, and I know that it's not worth doing. I know that it wasn't worth having such a thing. That type of person has the ability to give over mussar better than a tzaddik. And that's the idea behind it. Now, that doesn't mean that the tzaddik is not on a higher level. Of course the tzaddik. Obviously, we don't judge Olam Haba. But of course, that tzaddik is on a higher level. Nobody's going to look at Rav Chaim Knievsky and say, well, yeah, he's good, but you know, that guy over there, I mean, come on. Nobody's going to look at it that way. That's obvious. But there are advantages, and that's the way to look at this, to be able to say there are advantages to do one thing than the other. This is the idea behind what the Pasuk says. When there's a Shevet HaRasha giving Musar versus the Goral HaTzadikim. The Goral HaTzadikim is so much greater because obviously the Goral HaTzadikim is the reward that they get and everything they're involved with, that's obviously better. But the Shevet HaRasha, the Rasha has a Shevet. A Shevet is a stick, a rod that they use to hit people with, to give Musar with. That's the concept of once the Rasha has worked on himself and improved himself, brought himself to a certain level, then the Shevet HaRasha is above the Goral HaTzadikim. The beginning of this week's Parsha, Ki Seitzei LaMelchama Oloibecha. Obviously there's a pshat, and the pshat is when you go out to war against your enemy, out in the war, out in the fields, whatever you're doing. There's also a remez. The remez is when you go out to war against your Yetzer Hara. Your Yetzer Hara is there. You're fighting against your Yetzer Hara. That's the concept of what you're doing, and sometimes you win, sometimes you lose. That's what a war is. You're not guaranteed to win. You're obviously not guaranteed to lose either. That's what it means. We're not talking about a tzaddik gomer. Tzaddik gomer would be guaranteed to win. He never would have fought the battle in the first place. We're talking about a guy who sometimes wins, sometimes loses. We're talking about a guy who is a Baal Tshuva. He has these challenges. He's not exactly the same thing as a full tzaddik. So when he wins wars, Shavisa Shavio, you'll be able to take captives. You'll find people who are on that side who are doing things that you were doing, and you'll be able to grab them and you'll be able to bring them back. Those are the captives that you're going to have. Those who have fallen prey to the Yetzer Hara, those people are the people that you're going to be able to bring back. You can do that. Nobody else has the ability to do that. That's a very quick little word on the beginning of the Parsha on what it means that a Baal Tshuva is greater than a tzaddik. That's the concept behind it. Now, we have another Chassam Sofer. He says the following, and it's something that I never knew. You know, everybody was going, I remember when I was across the street at the J, and I was working at the J, there was a guy there who wasn't from, and I was the rabbi of the camp, right? So I was in charge of certain things, whatever it was, and this guy wasn't from, but he was part of the camp doing, you know, sports stuff and whatever, stuff like that. And I looked up at, like, the little, there's like a walkway, and there's a little thing on top of the walkway so you don't get hit by rain, that little awning that's right there. And in the awnings, underneath some of the columns, were bird nests. So I looked up at them once, and while he was listening, I said, you know, just to myself, really, just said, oh, wow, you could probably do Shiluach HaKain here. You could probably send away the mother bird, take the eggs, keep them for yourself, and that's that. This guy looked at me and was like, you could do what? So I tried to explain it to him. I said to him, you know, the fact is, you know, if you find a nest, then you can send away the mother bird, take the eggs, submit to Sassay Midiyorai, this is a mitzvah from the Torah, right? So the guy looked at me and he's like, what if you don't want the eggs? And I'm like, you got to do it anyway. the mitzvah from the Torah. To which he looked at me and he said, what? That's so cruel. And I'm like, that's so funny. Because the Torah says this is supposed to teach us not to be cruel. Right? But we don't know what exactly cruel is, what it isn't, and that's that. And if the Torah tells us to do this, is what you're supposed to do. So I always thought that way. This mindset was always in my head that you gotta do the mitzvah no matter what, even if you don't want the eggs. And I've done this mitzvah twice. I've been able to do this mitzvah twice in my house. It was a crazy, I can't even go on to this. So what I did was, a guy in yeshiva, when I was in base, a guy in yeshiva, this was my fourth year, I think, whatever it was, a guy in yeshiva ended up doing the mitzvah of Shiloh HaKein. And I heard about it, and the guy told me what he did, and I was like, oh my gosh, it's unbelievable. He was mafkir his windowsill. A bird came and laid an egg, and he immediately did Shiloh HaKein. I said, that's awesome. I wish I could do that also. So I was mafkir my windowsill, and no joke, within a week, a bird came and laid an egg. No joke. It's exactly what happened. Immediately, a bird came and laid an egg. So I was all excited. Got all excited. I got everything ready. I found out which was the female, which was the male. Got myself ready for it. And I picked up, sent away the mother bird. I had to use a magazine. I was too afraid to like push it with my hand. Pushed away. Picked up the egg. And I was going to go ahead and like put it in a glass box. I brought it to my Hashem and I dropped it in the street. And it broke. So I was very upset. But don't worry. I still made a kinyan. So I got the mitzvah. Don't do anything with it. Really, you're supposed to eat the egg, but if you don't want to, you don't have to. That's how I always put it in, right? So it's perfectly fine. By the way, and we'll talk about the segula that happens with Shiloh HaKein as well, but it really is unbelievable. The Ramban quotes Mori Nevuchim. And the Mori Nevuchim from the Ramban, as well as the Sefer HaChinuch, say the following, that the reason for Shiloh HaKein is to show us not to be cruel to take children in front of their mother. You're not supposed to be cruel in taking the children in front of their mother. You're not allowed to say Al Kan Sibur Yagiu Rachamecha. You can't say on the Kan Sibur Yagiu Rachamecha, your mercy should go onto the bird's nest. You're not allowed to say such a thing because it sounds like you're making fun of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. How is the Racham and whatever it is? Because that limits Hashem's abilities and makes it seem like HaKadosh Baruch Hu only wants us to do things that are with Rachamim, and that's not true. That's not how HaKadosh Baruch Hu works.
You can't say I thought it was because you can't assign a race to the Mitzvah because the Torah didn't provide a reason.
Very good. Yeah, that's the basic idea. But the Rambam and the Sefer HaChinuch, as we all know, give reasons for mitzvahs. They try to make it understand a little bit. And they give this specific reason for the mitzvah. Okay? But the funny thing is that it's really a gzera just not to be cruel to animals at all. The Chassam Sofer takes this reasoning and he takes it a step further. He says, if the whole mitzvah is to teach us the concept of not being cruel to animals, if that's the whole concept of the mitzvah, then if you don't need the eggs or the chicks, how could you take it? How could you take the eggs? I mean, if the whole idea is not to be cruel, there's nothing more cruel than taking babies away from the mother if you don't need them. Granted, if a person needs something, you're allowed to use every animal in the world for anything. There's nothing against shechita. There's nothing against doing anything with an animal that you might need in order to get the skins to be able to make love. There's nothing wrong with that. But if the whole mitzvah is not to be cruel, and this entirely is cruel, taking away the birds for no reason from the mother, even though you're sending the mother bird away, says Chassam Sofer, then you shouldn't do so, especially if Tzar Bala Chaim is Dioraisa. You can't give pain to animals Midioraisa. With Tzar Adam is different, but if Tzar Bala Chaim is Dioraisa, you can't do it. The Chavos Yair says it clearly, and the Chassam Sofer, this is in Shuvos, or a Chaim Simen Kuf, says clearly from Rashi, Bab Mesia, Kuf Beizam with Aleph. He also brings on the Rambam in Halachos, and maybe even a Mishnah in Chulin. None of the Rayas are really Mukhrach, but he says that it can't be, you wouldn't be able to take, halachically, you wouldn't be able to take the baby birds or the chicks, you wouldn't be able to take the eggs unless you absolutely needed them. If you don't need them, you shouldn't take it. Now it could be, it's even a machlokas tanayim. Have you guys ever heard of this machlokas? It's machlokas Rabbi Yehuda and the Chacham. What the mitzvah is. The pasuk says, shalech tishalach es ha'em. Shalech tishalach es ha'em. The funny thing is, the way that it says it, and the way that it words it in the pasuk itself, says it in a very, very strange way. Ki kari kan tzipa lefenecha baderach, when you meet up with a bird's nest down the road, v'chol eitzol ha'aretz, whether it's in a tree or on the land, afrochem o beitzim, whether it's chicks or eggs, v'im rovetz el afrochem, the mother is there, on the chicks, o ala beitzim, on the eggs, lo zikach ha'em alabanim. Don't take the mother with the children. Shalech tishalach. ha'esa'ein, send away the mother bird, v'esabanim tikach boch, and take the children for yourself. L'manita boch v'arach v'yam, it'll be good for you, you have length of days. Listen to the wording. It doesn't say send away the mother bird, and then don't take the mother. It doesn't say it that way. It says don't take the mother, send away the mother bird. Says the Rebbe Yehuda, shaleach mei karamashma, meaning, it's the following. Send away the mother bird first, and that way you won't be over on the lav of taking the mother together with the children. But the Rabbanan don't learn it that way. The Rabbanan say, don't, if you end up taking the mother bird with the kids, then send away the mother bird. It's an assay that's menatek the lav. It fixes up the lav, but the only mitzvah of sending away the mother bird is if you're already taking the mother and the kids, then you send away the mother bird. Now we can see what the machlokes is based on. Rabbi Yehuda holds there's a mitzvah to do this, even if you're not taking the kids for any reason. There's a mitzvah. Send away the mother bird no matter what. Do you need the kids? No. Does it matter if you have the kids? No. But send away the mother bird no matter what. But the Rabbanan say no. Only if you're taking the bird, the mother bird and the kids, and you want the mother bird and the kids, then there's a mitzvah. Send away the mother bird. What do you mean?
How do you medayik that from the Mishnah?
From the Mishnah itself? Yeah. That's what the Mishnah said.
No, but Mishnah says, the only thing the Mishnah says, the Machlok is that it's one says, oh, I'm going to take last day, and everyone says it's an assay, send it away. But who said that? You know what it says? Only send away the mother bird if you want the eggs.
If you want the eggs itself, no. Rabbi Yehuda would say no. It's the opposite.
No,
send away the mother bird, no matter what.
Saying,
the
get that. Why is it? Why is Rabbi Yehuda saying that?
Think of how it works. According to Rabbi Yehuda, it's send away the mother bird, no matter what. Whether you're gonna it's send away the mother bird. It's shalach mei karamashma, meaning you're not taking the bird and the eggs. You're not taking them. It's just send away the mother bird, no matter what.
If I want eggs, I don't necessarily want the mother. I just want the eggs. I don't want the mother.
I understand, but the wording of shalach me'ikara, it means originally, before you do anything, before you want to take anything, it doesn't matter. You have a mitzvah. Send away the mother bird and take the eggs. That's what it sounds like. Yeah, that's me'ikara, meaning originally, before you come to anything, before you want anything, send away the mother bird, take the eggs. But the way the Rabbanan are learning it, no, it's if you want everything, then send away the mother bird. So it sounds like you can only do it then. The Chassam Sofer says that, and that's Rabbi Yehuda Lishitaso. We all know the Rabbi Yehuda doesn't darshan. He doesn't go into the reasonings behind the pasuk. He just says, simply put, do this and go ahead and do it. The chamtzi is even starker. You don't even need to take the eggs to be makayim the mitzvah. You don't even need to take them. All you do is send away the mother bird and you're done. You were just makayim the mitzvah. You don't have to take any eggs. You don't have to make a kinyan. Nothing. You just send away the mother bird and you're done. Aye, but it says, v'abanim tikach boch. You should take the kids. Listen to what he says. It says, shishis yamim tasa ma'asecha. 6 days you should work. Does that mean you have to work for those 6 days? No. What does Shishi Yamin Tatsum Asaf mean? For 6 days what? 6 days you're permitted to work. Dashvis, and the seventh day you gotta rest. That's what you gotta do. Guys, it's the exact same thing. It's Shalet Shlach Zayim. Send away the mother bird. If you want the kids, go ahead and take the kids. Do you need to take the kids? No, you don't need to take the kids. Says the Chacham Tzvi. So what do I do with Babanim Tikach Loch? What do I do with and take the kids? Why would it even bother saying it? It's the most unbelievable thing. There's a school. If you do Shiluach HaKein and you send away the mother bird, Babanim Tikach Loch, you have the school of having children. You will be zocher to having kids. The Minchas Chinuch brings this down. It's brought down by the Chacham Tzvi. It's brought down by many Sfarim. Many of the Hasidish Sfarim bring it down as well. But this is from the Sefer HaChinuch himself says it. You're going to be zocher to have kids. I will tell you that what?
If you have 10 kids, can you make it worth something else?
No. It's still a bracha to have kids, even if you have 10. Yeah, I'm telling you to do it, and that 11th kid is going to be an awesome kid. Awesome kid. Here's the deal. All you do is you have a mother bird outside. I was mocker my little area, right? The mocker, the area outside my house. So I ended up finding the bird laid his nest there. You have to make sure each bird is different, mothers and fathers, when they go on top of that nest. It doesn't work with the father. It only works with the mother.
I know, it's mother.
Then you push away. There's certain ways each bird is different, and you'll find out. You just have to find out. There's a book out there that goes through. It's on Shiloh HaKein. There's a book on everything about all the mothers, how you can tell mothers of all these different birds. It's got to be a kosher bird as well. It's got to be kosher birds. No hawks, okay? No owls.
It's not going to be. Why has to be kosher? I don't have to take the eggs.
It's a good call. I guess it has to be the option of taking the mother bird. But that everyone agrees with. Well, everyone agrees that it's got to be that. Here's the deal. So I did it, picked up the egg, and that's all you have to do. You push away the mother bird, pick up the egg, and you're done. According to the Chacham Tzvi, you don't even have to pick up the egg, but we hold you should pick up the egg. Yeah. According to all the research, you should pick up the egg. After that, you're done. There is a bracha to make, al shiluach hakein, right? Al shiluach Halacha came to Rizal Prof, and I think that's that. The next week, after this all happened, I was telling over a friend of mine, Ben Sofer, Benjamin Sofer. We're walking back from a minyan, and as we were walking back from this minyan, he told me, he's like, you know, there's a famous school that you're going to have children from this. So there's a school for children. I said, that's awesome. You know, if it happens again, I know somebody who needs kids. A family who had, you know, a husband and wife who had been together for 2 years and a bit, 2.5 years, and they hadn't had a kid. I said, it's perfect. I'll tell them to come. They're good friends of ours. I'll tell them to come by, and they'll do Shiloh Kain. He said, that's perfect. A week later, the bird came back. I don't know if it was the same bird or not. Laid another nest, laid another egg, and I called over my friend. I said, get over here. You can do the mitzvah Shiloh Kain. It's a school, right? So he came by, and he went ahead, and he pushed away the mother bird, picked up the egg. He got to keep the egg. He actually kept the egg. Yeah, I'm sure he still has it. It's been years from that, right? Did not think a thing of it. It was a couple months later, whatever it was, that guy moved back to America. I didn't think of anything. I was in the middle of the summer, we found out that he had had a baby. He had a baby right around that time. Baby boy. It was a baby boy. Of course, come on. Because we went in for the bris. It was, it was Pesach. We were back for Pesach, and he had that. My parents wanted us out of the house. I had three kids at the time. They wanted us out, right? So we were staying there for Pesach. So I said, not a problem. We'll go to where this guy is. So I went out of town to go to the bris. And we'll go to this guy's bris, and then after we'll go. As we were sitting at the bris, all of a sudden I did a little bit of a cheshbon. We had done this right after Parshas Ki Seitzo was Parshas Ki Sabo. It was literally 9 months to the day.
Oh my God.
To when this bris happened. It was absolutely unbelievable. We looked it up and we went through the months and everything. It was the most unbelievable thing. I'm not a skula guy. I'm not a big skula guy, but this is the only time that it's ever happened to me. And we went through the entire thing. Yeah.
Chassam Sofer say you need a egg in order for it to do.
According to Chassam Sofer, you should. He doesn't say you can't. Well, you can't just take the egg and whatever it is. You should take the egg for yourself. But he doesn't say you absolutely have to. But that was an unbelievable little story that happened, and it was 100% true. I couldn't believe it. And it even realize it until later on. Now, if the mitzvah, okay, there's a whole little thing.
Did he ever think it?
I don't think he realized, and I didn't want to tell him at the bris, and I haven't really kept in touch with him. So, I did tell him that he owes me his firstborn, but he did name him after me, by the way.
At the yeshiva, we had a mitzvah about
related
eggs. Send it away, it normally doesn't come back.
Right.
This one came back the next day.
Yeah.
But all we did was pick up the egg.
And you put it right back on.
So then we called Rosh Yeshiva, and he came over, and he did it.
Yeah.
And the bird came back.
Yeah. You can keep doing. Yeah. It's a question of you can say the bracha then. You probably can't say the bracha. But yeah, 100%, you can do it hundreds of times. That's what they do in Eretz Yisrael. When they have something like this, I found out later, they have hundreds of people come by. And they all do Shiloh HaKein, because apparently the mother bird just keeps coming back. You're right. I don't know how it would work exactly. You can still do it. You can still, even if it's not Hefker, you can still do it. It's just you can't make a bracha. Yeah, Shirk Yisham Sabzmanu, Al Shiloh HaKein. But it does work. But however, there's a problem. There's a Zohar. The Zohar says another reason. A different reason for the entire thing. The Zohar says the reason behind this mitzvah, the reason why you send away the mother bird and you take the bunim, is to awaken the cries of the Shekhinah. To allow the Shekhinah, the mother of Klal Yisrael, to cry about her children who were taken away and put into gullus. That's what you're supposed to do. So you're supposed to awaken the cries of the Shekhinah, make the Shekhinah wish that he was around. That's what you're supposed to do. According to that, then there's no mitzvah. It seems like there's no mitzvah to take the kids. You don't need to take the kids. If the whole mitzvah is to send away the mother bird and just make it cry, and that's a remnant to the Shekhinah crying in Shemayim, then who cares if you take the kids or not? Says the Chassam Sofer, according to that Zohar, it shouldn't matter whatsoever. So then you'd be able to do it. But he says, Ein lanu esek b'nisaros. We don't deal with Kabbalistic sources, and therefore if the halacha seems to be one way, even though the Zohar says a different type of reasoning, if the halacha goes one way, then you have to do it. So l'chadchila, when you do Shiloh HaKein, you should only do it if you're going to keep the kids. That's what the Chassam Sofer holds. I don't know if the other Sfarim hold this way. Again, I'm not a halacha guy, so I'm not so sure. But regardless, that's what the Chassam Sofer says at the very, very end. Since the whole Pashup Shot is about cruelty, you shouldn't be cruel to the mother bird in that way. Okay, let's get to the very, very end of the the parsha. Very end of the parsha talks about a malik. And we all know that Zachor says Sharasalach on malik. You should remember what a malik did when you left Bederach Betzeis Chamim Mitzrayim. Now, this came, and Rashi tells you that the whole reason why a malik comes to us is because we cheated with our weights and scales. We have weights and scales and we use them. And when we cheat and we do like a little difference and we put in a little bit extra weight and whatever it is, it says it's 10 pounds and it's really 10 and a half pounds and we cheat and we do this, that, and the other, then a Kadosh Baruch Hu punishes us by bringing about against us a malik. Why? And even more so, the Gemara says the punishment of weights is so bad, cheating in weights is so bad, it's worse than Gilui Arayos. How is that possible? A person sleeping with an Ashes Ish versus moving weights? And moving weights, granted, okay, you're causing the guy a loss of money.
Well, there's something that makes sense.
Yeah?
You okay with this? You're stealing from somebody. Yeah. You're like, totally like stabbing in the back.
Ashes Ish is also stealing.
Yeah, but
It's terrible. I mean, we're talking about Gezel to a higher extreme. Yeah. Okay, but is it worse than Gilui Arayos? That's the question. Is it worse? Is it worse than sleeping with your mother? So worse than sleeping with your mother? It is more than, says the Gemara, more than sleeping with an Erva. How could that be? How is it, Shaykh, that it's worse than? Say, okay, it's on par with maybe. It's a type of Gezel. Okay, fine, maybe. But say it's worse than? How could this be worse? Here's Pshat. It's an unbelievable mitzvah. Here's what Nassif said. People sin for one of three reasons, he says. There's three reasons why a person does a chet. Number one, lack of the emunah. You don't believe HaKadosh Baruch Hu is watching you. You think that it's all going to be okay as long as the police don't catch me, but God doesn't matter to you. That's a form of avodah zarah. That's avodah zarah. You don't believe HaKadosh Baruch Hu is watching you? That's terrible. That's as if you're worshipping idols. Number two, a tremendous taiva. I so badly want to do that. Whatever it is, I want to do that so badly. There's a taiva, something that grabs me. And that's like Gilui Arayos. Gilui Arayos, there's a taiva, a desire to do something so badly. Number three, because you have bad midos. You were raised incorrectly. You just don't know what to do. You have too much kas, too much anger, or too much jealousy. You just can't get over yourself. I have no taiva for that object, but I don't want my friend to have it. I just don't want him to have it. Or I'm so angry at that guy, you just punch him in the face. That's like shvichus damim. That's like murder. That comes from that. So Gilui Arayos, Avodah Zarah, and Shvichus Damim, the big three, the big great three sins, are the three reasons why people sin. It's because of either lack of emunah, because of taiva, or because a person just has a bad midah that he can't get over. It's one of those three. So listen to this idea. If you steal from your friend, if you did it because you really want that object, you say to yourself, oh my gosh, that watch is unbelievable. I need to have that watch. Well, that's out of a taiva. That's like Gilui Arayos. Gilui Arayos is bad, obviously. Gilui Arayos is terrible. You don't want to come anywhere near it. But cheating in weights means you're in business and you don't believe God is going to give you what you're supposed to get. You're sitting there and you know that a Kadosh Baruch Hu has set you up since Rosh Hashanah. You know that the money you have is there since Rosh Hashanah. And yet you say, you know what? HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I don't believe it. I'm going to go ahead and do it on my own because I don't believe that you're going to take care of it for me. That's avodah zarah. That's a lack of faith, which is avodah zarah. Avodah zarah is a worse avera than Gilui Arayos in this way. In the sense that Gilui Arayos, granted you're over on a taiva, but at least you have an excuse. You can say to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I don't know what came over me, but a ruach shtus, there was nothing I could do. It was a taiva. That the woman, this, that, the object, whatever it was too great for me. By a lack of emunah, you're saying to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I didn't believe in you. And that in and of itself is more problematic, so to speak. So when we look at it, we say the following. Cheating in weights, a form of avodah zarah, is worse than Gilui Arayos. That's what it is. And when you have that, you have a lack of emunah, then a Kadosh Baruch Hu brings about the king of lack of emunah. Who's the king of the lack of emunah? A malik. That's why a malik comes up against you for cheating in weights. It is a beautiful pshat from the Netziv. It mamish fits. And it's exactly what the idea is of the connection between the two. What are you going
to
say, Ross?
It's a taiva also. People love to steal, people love money.
What do you mean, a taiva also? In other words, that cheating in weights could be because of taiva?
Yeah, I want money. You make a calculation about it. Muna, you just want the money.
I understand completely. When it says over here, lo yelecha b'kischa evan v'evan gedolo k'tana, there's doesn't seem to be a reference to a person just with a taiva type of issue. It seems to be something which is, if it's a taiva type of issue when he just wants money, it seems unlikely that he'll do something in which it's so private, or something that's, I don't want to say, like, the only person who can really catch you is a Kadosh Baruch
Hu. This is more premeditative.
Exactly. It's something which you're saying, God is not caring about me. There's nobody else, and the police aren't going to, you know, there's no police around. It's not like that. A taiva, you'll just take it out of his pocket, so to speak. I'm not saying it doesn't include taiva. I agree with you. But the case is more likely to be a case of lack of emuna than anything else. Now let's go and talk some sofer. I'm telling you, it just goes, it flows one into the other. It says, Asher korcha baderech, he met you on the road. He met you on the road. It's kilu, yeah, it just happened to be Amalek was like walking around with all their weapons, like, hey, Jews! And they went out after him. That's not what happened. The Medrash says that Amalek ran 400 parsa. 400 parsa is 600 to 800 miles to run after the Jews to go destroy them. They heard that they had left Mitzrayim. They remembered that their grandpappy, right, and the Jews' grandpappy, Yaakov and Esav, hated each other. And they came up against us literally in order to destroy us. They came up against us. It wasn't just they met us on the road and they're like, we don't like the looks of you. It wasn't like one of those Wild West like shootouts. It was a premeditated, they came up against us, they wanted to fight us. That's what it was supposed to be. It's not Asher Korcha. It can't be that way. Number one. Number two, it says by his neighbor, and they destroyed all the weak ones among you. You were weary and tired. Oh, you know, when I fight a war, I also wait for the other people to calm down a little bit. You don't take advantage of them when they're weak. You know, you say like, oh, you know, we'll wait for you. Tell us when you're ready. That's what I do when I'm in a war. What do you think Amalek is going to do? We blame them for fighting us when we were tired and weary? You think they were going to wait to fight for us when we were all rested and well rested? And we're like, okay, now we can fight. And Amalek's like, yay, now we have a fair fight. Of course they're not going to do that.
They did
what?
No, seriously.
The what?
They let the people rest. They wouldn't attack at night. They would plan during the day. They wouldn't attack during certain months. They would attack at other times.
For both sides. If the other nation is weak and you're strong, you don't say like, oh, we're not going to fight you. You guys are too weak for us. That doesn't happen. You never see a basketball game or a football game where they're just like, you know what, we're much better than you. Like whenever you're playing the Charlotte Bobcats, there's no team that plays the Charlotte Bobcats and just says, you know what, yeah, you guys should be in the ABL. Like there's no, and nobody says like, you know, like, oh my gosh, you're the worst team in the league. We're just not going to play. Nobody does that. They take advantage. And they score as many points as they can, and they make them look silly. That's what ends up happening. It's the same thing in these types of wars. So why would it be like this? So here's the pshat. Okay, there are two ways to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and I know it sounds strange, but really it's only two ways. Either you serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu because you say to yourself, I'm going to do exactly what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants me to do. Exactly what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants me to do. And he's ready. We show HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we're ready to do everything he wants. We take the yoke of the Torah upon ourselves and all the mitzvahs, and we say we're ready for it, we're doing it, and then it's that. If people do that, then there's no way that any nation in the world could fight us. Every nation in the world could come against us. You could have 6.5 billion to 7 billion people come up against us, however many millions of people would be there, 5 million, 6 million Jews. If we're doing the Torah, if we're learning Torah correctly, 5 to 6 million Jews will destroy every nation in the world if they come up against us. If you're doing it correctly, that's without a question. If you're doing it incorrectly, you're throwing off the yoke and you're just like, you know what, forget it, God, we don't care about you, we'll do whatever we want, then it doesn't have to be a Amalek. Any nation will be able to destroy us. The question is what it's like when it's neither. You know, we're like, yeah, I'll do the mitzvahs because, you know, I got my tefillin and I got to go to Minyan anyway. And there's peer pressure, so if I don't show up for Minyan, somebody's going to, whatever. You know, we're not throwing off the yoke, but we're definitely not taking the bull by the horn. We're just doing it because, you know, it's part of life. Part of life, we're just going out and doing it. That's called bimikra. It happens to be that it's easy for me right now, so I'm going to do it. That's called keri. At this moment, it seems to be okay. That's what it seems to be. And if you act with keri to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, HaKadosh Baruch Hu comes right back at you with something called mikra. You're going to have a war. You're not guaranteed to win. You're not guaranteed to lose, but you're not guaranteed to win. And things happen. And you're going to have to choose something. And that's the pshat. Refidim. Where they were at when Amalek came up against them was where they were rafu yadayim. This is not blaming Amalek for coming up against us when we were weak. It's that Amalek only has power over us when we're weak. If we weaken ourselves and we don't push ourselves to learn Torah, if we don't care enough, we're rafu yadayim. We weaken our hands and we say, whatever, we'll do it if we have time. But if we don't have time, we're not going to do it. If somebody says something like that, then you know what? Amalek comes. And Amalek has a power. They have a power to be able to take care of us in that way because they do have some type of strength. That's what it meant, Asher Kor Kobaderech. They were only able to come up against you and fight you. They only had a power because you acted with carry. So they came after you with carry. That's the concept. It's a terrible thing that a king has to fight a war. Kings shouldn't ever fight wars. Why? Because people are killed. Thousands of people on both sides. Whenever a king needs anything, it's an absolute terrible thing to fight a war. Terrible thing. So at the end of the day, it's very strange that a Kadosh Baruch Hu commands us as a mitzvah saseh midioraisa to destroy Amalek. That means you have to put yourself in danger, and go out to war and possibly die in order to do this mitzvah. There are very few mitzvahs where you're literally putting your life on the line to kill Amalek. Because it's not, we're not talking about an easy case. Where it's just like a little baby and you have to slice his throat, although that in and of itself is probably extremely hard for anyone to do. We're not talking about something like that. You have to fight against Amalek in a war. Who? I'm going to go to war. I might die. When does the Kodesh Baruch Hu put my life on the line in order to destroy Amalek? What kind of a mitzvah is that? When am I ever required to do such a thing? Give me another mitzvah like that. That I have to go out to war and fight in order to do this. That's the question. Why is Amalek like this? So it really follows with what we just said. Kings would never make wars if they didn't have to. But kings feel like they have to. They need more money, they need more land, they need more whatever. They do that. But by us, Jews, that's not the right thing to do. However, there are times where a Kadosh Baruch Hu makes it a mitzvah to fight. By the seven nations of Canaan, we needed to get rid of them. And by Amalek, we need to get rid of them. What's the problem? What's the issue? What's wrong with them? Why does that make us any different from the Arabs trying to destroy Jews in Eretz Yisrael? From an Arab trying to do a suicide bombing in order to kill the Jews? Why does that make us any different? Says Chassam Sofer, a brilliant answer. A brilliant answer. Chacham can take this and take this further. This is a true, true answer. There is Tumah in the world. And when there's Tumah in the world, that Tumah doesn't allow us to improve ourselves to the point that we need to get at. We cannot become an Am Kadosh, a Tahor nation, when we have people surrounding us who are Tame, who are destructive. That's impossible. It's the concept of, and argue it all you want, this is a good argumentative, this is a topic. The topic of, should we allow this person to be in yeshiva when we know he's terrible for the other bachurim? This boy, who has done terrible things in the past and will probably cause others to do terrible things in the future. But if we let him go, he's going to do even worse. And chassam, something even worse might happen to him. Should we take him in yeshiva to save him from that fate? Or should we say, no, it's going to be too much for our bachurim? I'm not telling you whether yes or no, whether you should take them or not. That's not the situation for right now. But this is the concept of Amalek, and that's the concept of the seven nations that lived in Eretz Canaan. They were extremely tame, and they had bred themselves, they had raised themselves, they had made themselves, they had put themselves in position where it was nearly, not totally, but nearly impossible for any of them to make the correct decision. They were going to be tame for the rest of their lives. And there was nothing you could do to stop them. And those nations living in Eretz Canaan together with the Jews would have destroyed our ability to become more kadosh. It would affect us. And it did. Look what it did to us during the times of the Shoftim. We left some of the nations around. We left some of the cities around. And they destroyed us. They destroyed us. We got involved in their Avodah Zarah. We got involved in their Giri Arayis. We got involved in everything they were doing because we left them around. You leave these people around, these Tomei people around, this Tumah affects you. And you have to get rid of it. You have to throw it away. Throw it as far as you can. It's almost like a klipa, a shell on top of a fruit. You can't eat the fruit when the klipa is still there. Amalek affects the world. It takes one bad joke, one bit of blood time, it's even more so with the internet nowadays. One joke that makes fun of a Maimar Chazal, and all of a sudden everything else is destroyed. You can destroy every good thing that everyone else has done. Rav Volbi once got up and he said a schmooze. It was an unbelievable schmooze. Unbelievable schmooze. A muster schmooze. And one balker went up to Rav Volbi and said to Rebbe, no one can knock out that schmooze. No one can make a kasha on that schmooze. That schmooze is going to last forever. It's mamish tayra mina shamayim. Rav Volbi said, I can knock it out. He said, what do you mean you can knock it out? He said, I can knock it out with three words. I said, what do you mean? He said, ha, ha, ha. That's all it takes. Just a little laughter. Just a little Like that. Can destroy everyone else. It can knock out everyone. A little bit of tuma can dispel all the kedusha that's there in the world. It's the opposite of, you have a room full of darkness, one light can light up the whole room. It's as if to say, one bit of darkness can make the whole room dark. One bit of darkness. And that's the pshat. Amalek is terrible for the world. It destroys the world because these people don't think straight. They have their heads on wrong and they've raised themselves to that level so that these people, and nowadays it's not a nation, so to speak. It's the mentality. The mentality of, we want to destroy, we don't want to build up. We want to work, we want to knock people down. We want to be frivolous. We want to be against antagonists. We want to go up against everybody. We don't want to help. That's the concept of what Amalek stands for. And with that concept, you have to destroy it. You have to destroy it. That's the concept, says the Chasam Sofer. And that's the reason why we have to go so far against Amalek and kill them. It's not about the people. It's not about that they're bad people. It's that their mentality is so estranged. Their mentality is so bad for the rest of the world, it's better for the world for them not to be here. That's the mitzvah that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us. We'll stop with that for right now, guys.